Welcome to episode 225 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. Today, we're going to be looking at how to get more families skiing and how resorts can help parents. Plus, we're going to be looking at what's new and what's coming up on the World Cup racing circuit this winter. And we have our first snow report of the season, and there's an update from the Carrick Smith boys. Now, my name is Ian Martin. I would like to introduce my guest today. I am delighted to welcome Nicole Feliciano from Ski Mums. Hi, Nicole. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
You nailed it. Perfect.
Excellent. And just tell us, where are you today?
Right now, I am in Brooklyn, New York. I bounce between Brooklyn and Warren, Vermont, at the base area of Sugar Bush Mountain in Vermont.
Excellent. Have you had any snow on the east coast of the states yet?
We had a sizable snowstorm in October that delivered about 6 to 8 inches, but that quickly melted. But we are now in the block of weather where it's cold enough to make snow. We're seeing snow at night, and the snow farmers, as we call them, are going into overdrive.
Well, we're getting excited about the season. I mentioned you're from Ski Mums, and there's a clue in the name there about what your business and what your website is about, and we'll come on to that later. But let me introduce my second guest today, also joining me for the first time. I'm delighted to welcome Matt Garker, host of the Skiing is Believing podcast. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
It's great to have you on the show. I'm often listening to your podcast. This time you're going to be a guest on mine. Whereabouts are you?
I am at home at the moment, just north of Manchester in the UK, and we haven't had any snow yet.
No snow in the UK. That doesn't happen so often, no. But I happen to know, I hope this probably isn't a spoiler for our conversation later, but I believe you're probably going to be skiing first out of all of us, because you're going out to Finland tomorrow to the races in Levi.
Yeah, really excited to be going to watch my first ski race of any kind, never mind World Cup. I believe that there is a bit of a dump expected during the race on Saturday. Hopes are that we're going to get a nice powder race, or maybe not a nice powder race for Dave Ryden, let's say.
Okay, yeah, well, he likes it icy, I know that. Yeah. And certainly it affects conditions if it snows during the race. And in fact, we'll probably come on to that, but the actual race order that you get drawn on can make a huge amount of difference if it's snowing heavily. But that's when you're going to be skiing next. A question I love to ask my guests when we start off with is when you last skied or snowboarded. So, Nicole, for you, when was that?
I had an amazing trip to Alyeska in Alaska at the middle of April this year, and it was phenomenal. They get great late season snow and super long days when I was there. It was an absolute delight.
Right. So are you like a big mountain skier? Were you heli skiing there?
We did a day on the Cat. They did get a lot of snow when we were there. I am actually a late in life learner. I did not learn until in my mid-30s. I don't know if I'll ever get past sort of the beginning advanced territory. So I don't know if helicopter skiing is for me. I do. I love a groomer, but I also love darting in and out of the trees. And one of the things that I really try to support is getting more women, you know, taking more lessons and letting them know that you don't have to be this expert off-cliff jumper to really enjoy the sport that we all love.
Sure. And so in Alaska then, Alaska, there's actually a ski resort there as well. There are groomers there as well. Because, you know, in my mind, you only ever see it in the videos.
Yeah, there are a number of resorts. We were at one, Alyeska. It's about 45 minutes from Anchorage. It is on the Icon Pass. So in the United States, we're very keen on the multi-pass products. So you can ski 7 days there with your Icon Pass, but many people get a season pass there, and it really does serve Anchorage, which is a larger city in Alaska. Lots of people do skinning and backcountry skiing there, but they also have a robust racing program, both for Nordic skiing and alpine skiing, that they do get a lot of racers. The University of Anchorage has a pretty robust program. So more racing and gates than you would imagine there.
Right. Okay. What about yourself, Matt? When were you last skiing?
So I think it was actually last month, much more different to Nicole. It was actually a chill factor. So quite the opposite to Alaska, really.
Yeah. So you talk about the indoor snow slope in Manchester, right?
Yeah. We just went there one one morning with my granddad, who I co-host the Skiing is Believing podcast with. And yeah, it was good to get the skis back on, hopefully get a chance to go this weekend, and then got a trip to Norway coming up in February.
Right, excellent. And the reason that you went along to Chill Factory was you were trying to get a bit of practice in before going out to Levy this weekend, was it?
Yeah, just to see how rusty we were after a bit of time without putting the boots on and buckling in.
Okay, well, in about a month's time, I'll be out skiing, if all goes well, in Courchevel and Mirabel. And listen, if you're starting to plan your skiing for this winter, I'm delighted to confirm that InterSport are sponsoring the Ski Podcast again for a second winter. And that means all podcast listeners can save money on your ski hire by using the code SKIPODCAST at InterSportRent.com. Or you can simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied at checkout. Now, we have a little bit of news. One thing I spotted was that White Stuff, the clothing brand, they recently sold up for £40 million. Now, I remember these guys when I was doing seasons in Mirabel in the mid-90s, selling their sweatshirts out of bin liners, just going around the different chalets and selling them all. So that is a pretty amazing story, that. I'd also like to thank Alex Irwin, who's a regular on the podcast, sent me a couple of pics he's got of original White Stuff sweatshirts from back in the day. Another piece of news, Tour de France have released their schedule for 2025, and we're going to see La Plan and Courchevel. They're going to be finishes in both resorts. It's going to be the fifth time for both of those. So that'll be happening in around the end of July. I think the stages are on the 24th and 25th of July in consecutive days. So keep your eyes peeled if you're a fan of those resorts and you want to see what they're like in summer as well. And finally, our equipment episodes, skis, boots, jackets, helmets and goggles, they're all live now. You can catch those as podcasts or you can see them on the YouTube channel as well. I've been doing those with Al Morgan, our equipment expert, and he just knows absolutely everything. I love doing those podcasts because I learn loads. I also mentioned in the previous podcast we had a survey running. Now, the response to that has been overwhelming. I'd like to thank everyone for entering that or sending in their details. I've closed it now. I'll be delving through the results and I'll be picking a winner soon, which we'll announce in episode 226. And if you recall, we've got about 500 or maybe £800 worth of prizes, including a carve too. Now, snow, we had a little discussion about snow earlier. There's some that fell early this week. I'm going to Tiene at Christmas with my family. I noticed a nice covering of snow in Tiene Le Lac and higher up. And there's some more snow, a more significant amount coming in the Alps this weekend, probably maybe 40 centimetres or something like that. From what Matt was saying, maybe it's going into Finland as well. But we have our first snow report of the season from regular contributor Dave Burrows from Snow Pro Ski School. He was out in Glacier 3000 in Switzerland. So let's hear what he had to say.
Hi, Ian. It's Dave from Snow Pro Ski School. I'm here today at Glacier 3000. And joining me, Edward Kufas. I've known you since how long?
8 years.
8 years. I taught you how to ski, basically, when you were three. But now you're a grown man almost. And what are you here doing with me today? Why aren't you at school?
I'm doing like a job shadowing.
Job shadowing. In the UK, they call that work experience. So you come and you try to find out what people do for a living and stuff. And basically, you've got to get out of school and you just come and skiing all day with me. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we're up here, Glacier 3000. Glacier 3000 opened about a week ago. Glacier 3000, Switzerland. It's just sits on the glacier in between, Les Diablerets and sort of Sion on the other side in the Valais. It's beautiful up here today, except for what?
The wind.
The wind. How strong is the wind today?
70.
Yeah, 70 kilometers an hour. So we've got all the way up here, but as you might be able to hear in the background, it's a bit windy. Pistes aren't open today. So luckily, I was skiing here yesterday, and I can tell you that the slopes are in amazing condition. So not too hard, not too soft, just firm, beautiful glacier snow. And they've kind of redesigned it up here a little bit. The snow park itself, they moved it so it's not right next to kind of the piece for the recreational skiers, and they put all the racers over the back on a different piece. So it's all fully open. It's all much better redesigned. So it's looking really, really good. We've had blue skies here for goodness knows how long. How long has the nice weather been?
A week.
Yeah, at least a week, hasn't it? and we had some new fresh snow. New fresh snow was pretty cool, and it's all been compacted down, so it's looking good. The rest of the mountain's a bit bare because it's been dry for like a month or so, but the snow is due to come, I think, next week, and it started to go cold, so first signs of winter are here. So for your rest of your work experience, Dave, what are we going to do?
Go to the office.
Go to the office, and we're going to do boring office stuff instead of going skiing.
Yep.
It's a real shame. Cool. All right, well, I wish you the best of luck with your ski season. You're starting this weekend. All right, well, thank you. Let's go and do the rest of your work experience, Dave.
Yeah.
See you soon.
Great. Well, that's it. That's very exciting to hear from Dave there. And it makes me even more excited about going skiing for this winter. Now, Nicole, I introduced her as being from Ski Mum. Did a little bit of research prior to our conversation. I found out that you are the number 11 mom blogger in the USA. And things that you like to talk about are girl power, style and beauty through the lens of being 50 plus, travel and wellness, mental health. Well, I can personally probably only fit into two of those categories. But I had a good look around your site, mumtrends.com. Also described as the site is your girlfriend. You always look forward to bumping into at yoga class. She always makes you feel better about yourself. And I found lots of very interesting stuff in there. Obviously, I'm not a mom myself, but how did the site start? How did you set it up?
I was coming out of a career with Ralph Lauren in the retail industry. And when I had my girls, I had to really pivot what I was able to spend time on. I was obviously much more focused on family, and having less time, money, and really the resources to, you know, get out and shop or take care of beauty treatments. So I was trying to share the resources that I found tremendously helpful. And when I started it back in 2007, it was the Wild West of blogging. It was, you know, a very low barrier to entry. Influencers didn't know how to create video or really take great photos. So I fortunately had a lot of runway to develop the brand and my voice. You know, if I were trying to start it now, these influencers are so slick and so on brand right from the start. So I was fortunate that I was really able to write a lot and focus on the voice of the brand and develop that. And then over the years, I noticed that the ski content was where I wanted to spend more time, and family travel was really what I was interested in. So I've let go of doing a lot of the other things so we can focus on outdoor content. Because when it comes to serving families that love to play outside, it's a very underserved market. There is really not too much for them right now.
You mentioned that you've, you know, segued into really focusing on skiing. And I guess evidently that is why I asked you on the show today, because in particular, I noticed that you've recently done a happiness survey of ski mums, the inaugural one of those. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, Ian, I've been noticing when I look at the statistics year to year, the National Ski Areas Association publishes the demographic survey. And what I'm seeing is that women are dropping off. Right now, 35% of the population of skiers identifies as female. And that's down from a peak of 40. So we've got a problem, because women are not replacing themselves on the mountain. And if they're not heading to the mountain, a lot of them are not going to be bringing the kids, which is really going to hurt our sports. It's going to hurt the racers that are in the pipeline as well. And I wanted to do a dive into why this was happening and really start at the beginning, because if we're making it so challenging for families to get there, I know price is a big consideration and we hear that again and again, but there's some other things. And some of the things that we really wanted to focus on were those new mom experiences. Is there childcare? Is there a place to breastfeed? Are there group lessons that are affordable and well-timed? So if she's got a little one that's back in the lodge and she has to, you know, get the older one to the lesson, can she even make that happen? So we wanted to focus on that and really give resorts and ski areas some data and some numbers to put behind what could be changes to help get our families up and running. So we surveyed 1,000 moms, and their replies were not surprising, but we hope they're informative.
I mean, I found that very interesting. I think what you're saying is so important, because I think we're all aware that skiing is a mature market. Did you say there that, or certainly your results showed that the median age was 35 and children's participation rates are down over the last decade or so. And that's not just in the States. We see exactly that same thing happening, not just in the UK, but in Switzerland and in Austria and traditional Alpine nations as well. And they're very concerned about it. Unless you have these new people coming into the market, then that market, you know, although we all live longer and are kind of fitter for longer, you know, will eventually mature out. So it's so important to be able to make ski resorts welcoming places for families. And Chemi Alcott, who I've had on the show, you know, a couple of times, she's previously talked about the difficulties of being the mum, and lots of mums end up kind of putting their skiing second and their family first. And, you know, I'm a parent, I'm definitely not a mum, but my experience is different. But there were some really interesting stats in there. You mentioned about affordable ski lessons.
Right. So when it came, it was interesting when it came to childcare, and that would be for younger kids. So sort of the two and under crowd, really there, it was more about access, the ease of access and the location and the quality of it. Those who answered the survey, number four was price. But when it came to the group lessons, you know, it's definitely price sensitive. You know, here in the US, I've heard group lessons going as high as $270 per kid per day. And that is just eye-watering for a family. So many families have two or three kids. You're looking at thousands of dollars in lessons to make that experience happen. Now, not everybody's going to go to a posh resort. We do have many of local resorts where it's much more affordable. But those group lesson having an entry fee where the kids get a setup, a rental setup, a group lesson for 2 or 3 days, because we know they need those 3 days to really put it together to make it happen.
God, those prices are expensive. I mean, we're kind of aware in Europe that lift pass prices are very expensive in the States. And you referred to the collective passes before, and we've certainly covered, we have lots of coverage about the Epic Pass and the Icon Pass and how they're growing. And more than half of Americans have one of these passes because of the cost of lift tickets, but the cost of ski school there, $270 per child per day, is hugely expensive. But I think, you know, on top of just lessons, did the respondents say that they were looking for more access to just in general on mountain childcare?
Yeah, one of the things that the families were looking for in general was a nice place to gather and congregate. And I do feel like the European resorts do better at this than the American ones. So a place in the lodge where you could read a book to a child that maybe is not ready to do, you know, 2 or 3 runs, and they just need to regroup and rest, or they need a snack. And it's also a chance for families to meet each other. I know some of my deepest friendships were made in ski lodges with parents who had similar age children, and giving the parents these spaces. You know, right now the model seems to be monetizing every square inch of every lodge and turning it into a little cafe or a retail store, but giving parents space for their kids to spread out. We often see them, I often refer people to airports. When you go through an airport lounge, you'll see that they often have these spaces carved out for kids to run and play. They're not huge, but it's enough for the kids to get their wiggles out before that you put them on a flight. And something similar to that is what parents are looking for, or an easy place to change a diaper. I think you call them that nappies, but places that can get parents and kids access to the indoors to warm up, and also a chance to play and connect with other kids.
I mean, I think that's really important. So the survey, you know, went out through the States. I think I initially saw it shared through Snow Sports Industry America or something like that. Have you had much feedback from resorts in relation to the results?
We have had feedback from resorts. We've had feedback from Palisades Tahoe was pretty fantastic, and also Steamboat, who in Colorado, who they've invested in a wonderful childcare facility for their employees. And I think they're really seeing it pay off with employee retention. Now, what I would love to see is more men in the industry. So far, it's mostly been women responding to it. And, you know, we're equal opportunity when it comes to parenting. You know, I think both dads and moms want to make this experience better for their kids. So we'd certainly love to have more responses from men. And I did do a presentation recently with the National Ski Areas Association about ways to get more women involved and families involved. And one interesting thing is we followed up with the survey to ask them how many more days, if some of these things were added, how many more skier days would you be looking at adding a season? And the average mom said they would be adding 15 or more ski days. So it is a huge impact on the resort's overall income and revenues if they can implement some of these changes.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of data is incredibly valuable. I think once resorts understand that there is a commercial benefit for these things, and they're more likely to make a difference. And I think there's broader questions thrown up in relation to the survey about the ways to get more families skiing. You know, I was very lucky. Both of my parents skied. I went skiing from a young age. But I noticed that the survey said that only 44% of mums think the industry cares about supporting families. What do you think the industry needs to do to get more families skiing?
Well, even something as small as, you know, building those play areas, making it super easy when you're dropping your kid off for ski school, having an extra set of hands. So that's a great opportunity for teenagers who are maybe looking at their first job, or retirees, somebody to help grab skis and shuttle the bags. There's also a lot of single parents out there who are trying to make this happen, who quite literally don't have that extra set of hands when they've got two kids at drop off. So staffing the entranceway can be as something that's incredibly helpful. Having supplies on hand for quick changes for kids, making the ski school the first thing that you access, rather than making it maybe a retail store or a concession, so that parents can drop off quite easily and quite quickly. And then building things like easy access to breastfeeding location, easy access to diaper changing stations. We know that fundamentally, changing the price is a longer conversation, but there's things they could do this season to build more family-friendly access. And then programming-wise, making sure that perhaps you pose somebody there to take photos of the kids coming in when they're meeting their parents or taking photos on the mountain. We can use these family-friendly experiences and share them on social media. I feel like mountains are missing some of this low-hanging fruit to capture these images, share them with families, and then they're going to use them on social media to show that, wow, this resort is incredibly family-friendly. Look, they've got their mascot out. They've got the kids out skiing. It's all smiles and hot cocoa. So there's things they could do right now to make this season even more family friendly.
Sure. I think all of those things definitely add up. We took our kids skiing when they first started to La Rosière in France. And one of the things they did is kind of almost what you're talking about there, in that they, through the ESF, they took photos of them all and gave us these free photos. And yeah, it costs peanuts, really, if you compare the cost of the lessons. Well, that's really interesting. Nicole, have you ever skied over here in Europe at all? Is that something on your radar?
I have skied. I was, fortunate to ski once in Switzerland, and I would love to spend more time in Austria specifically, because I think it's just such part of the culture that kids are welcome on mountain, and it's just expected. It's not annoying. It's just, they know that to raise future skiers, they really have to make the experience thoughtful from beginning to end. So believe me, I would love to spend more time skiing in Austria, but so far I've only been to two Swiss resorts. But boy, how easy is it to get there by train? That was also just mind-boggling, that you can step off the train, you can get to your resort. There was no car that you had to hire. They just made it incredibly easy. The ski schools were convenient. So I do think we've got a lot to learn from the European resorts for sure.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I think we're often thinking that we've got a lot to learn from the States. It's good to hear that we can reciprocate on that as well. Well, that's really interesting, Nicole. I'll put a link to the website and to the results of the happiness survey. And I'm guessing you'll be doing another one of those at the end of next season, will you? Will that become an annual thing?
We'll probably do it every other year. This season, we're going to be focusing on gear for moms and women and really encouraging them to make the investment and buy their first set of skis or upgrade their skis. We're finding that often, mom, and I'm sure you find this familiar, you're spending all of the money on the kids' gear and replacing it year after year. So sometimes mom is skiing on an old pair of kids' skis or she's skiing on the rental or hired skis and the rest of the family is, you know, better equipment. So we think the hypothesis is if she is on equipment that she feels capable and strong on, she's going to add more ski days. And we also are trying to get her to invest in seasonal tunes throughout the year. So maybe she learns how to put an edge on herself and learns how to wax and keep the skis in good condition, or she buys a tuning package. Because I know for me, I'm a better skier when my skis are in great shape. So sharing that education is one of our big focuses this year.
Oh, okay, well, I look forward to hearing about that. And it's so interesting listening to what you're saying there, because I know that Shemi would be exactly in agreement with you. But if it's all right with you, Nicole, I'm going to move on to Matt now. Matt, it is great to welcome you to the podcast. I'm guessing some of our listeners will know your voice already from your own podcast. What they might not realize is that you're younger than most podcast hosts, definitely younger than most ski racing experts. When did you start the Skiing is Believing podcast?
Yeah, so it started, we started with a season preview for the 23-24 season. So it's been going for just over a year now. We had absolutely no intention for it to have, I'm not going to say skyrocketed, but in terms of what we had planned, it has skyrocketed in terms of the fact we're going to a World Cup this weekend. We started just talking about the World Cup, reviewing the Alpine ski racing, and then did our first interview in January and have actually continued them all throughout the spring, summer, and autumn. And are still going with them now into the new season.
Oh, and to clarify then, just in case listeners didn't realise, you know, your focus is on ski racing. So you went through the season reviewing all the races last year, and then the closed season, you've been interviewing all sorts of people. I mentioned Shemi, but the most recent podcast he had out there was Mark Gerardelli, who was a huge skier for me back in the 80s and 90s. Really interesting to listen to him, but people from the industry as well, like Nick Fellows, you recently interviewed. You know, you've been incredibly busy, which is something I respect because I spend a lot of my time doing the podcast as well. How many episodes have you produced in the last year or so?
I'm not exactly sure on an accurate number, but I know it's somewhere in the 80s.
More than one a week. You've definitely been busy. And you mentioned you're going out to Levy this weekend. And there are World Cup slalom races going out there. And in fact, it'll be the first start for our British skiers, Dave Riding, Billy Major and Laurie Taylor. They had an amazing year last year. I think, you know, we've reported before that they were sixth in the world collectively, you know, beating many nations, including the States and Canada. Do you think they can continue that amazing form from last year? Or what do you think would represent success for each of them this winter?
To be honest with you, Ian, I think the only way is up for certainly Billy and Laurie. And I can see Dave sustaining this fantastic consistency he's had over nearly a decade now. My prediction was at the start of the season, we're going to see all three of them in the World Cup finals in Sun Valley in March in the slalom discipline. There's a World Championships around the corner in Saalbach in February. There's a chance in a World Championships any given day, any given race, that there could be a medal for any three of the boys. The slalom competition is by far and away the hardest men or women, any of the four disciplines to call in terms of a winner, in terms of a podium even. We do our weekly predictions and I'm scratching my head and really struggling to pick one for Levy this weekend. The general idea is that Laurie will follow up on from his eighth place in Aspen in March. Dave is expected to continue with another podium, maybe even get another victory. And Billy, it's just about chipping away at him for him, getting that consistency. This is the important thing, I think. Get the consistency and then you can start thinking about matching the targets and the achievements of Dave over the last few seasons.
So when you say you could see them all at the World Cup finals in Sun Valley, does that mean that they would all need to finish in the top 30? Is that how that happens?
So the World Cup finals is the top 25 in the overall standings at the end of the season.
Okay, so top 25. So that would be, you know, a significant step up for Billy and for Laurie. For Dave, obviously, he's been, you know, very consistently within the top 10. What about, I touched on this in my interviews with Shemi Alcott and Neil McCoy at the London Ski Show. What do you think about the return of Marcel Hirscher and Lucas Brathen? Is that how his surname is pronounced? You know, they're both back after retirement, but with different countries representing Netherlands and Brazil, respectively. Do you think either of them will podium this year?
I'd love to see it. Don't be surprised if we see it. Based off what Lucas Pinheiro Braathen produced on his return in Solden, which was a fourth place finish, coming from bib number 41. He was way back in the field with no real expectation. No real expectation at all. He comes down with such control and swagger, crosses the line, first position, stays there. I think it was for 15 races until his best mate, Atalie McGrath, comes and takes the lead from him. And the key detail that I have missed out is that he does a little samba dance when he's crossed the line to really live up to his Brazilian tag. In terms of Hirscher, he's an absolute legend. 8-time overall champion on the World Cup circuit. Slalom and giant slalom, just one of the best techniques you'll see ever on men's alpine skiing. And he came down from bib 34 with this new FIS wildcard rule, which he's taken full advantage of. He's going to be starting this weekend in Levy for his slalom return, starting around that same sort of number again. He came in to finish 23rd in Solden, and I can imagine him doing something around that again just to get that basis. And the fact that he's got some points to start the season, if he can do so in both disciplines, don't be surprised if we see him edging closer and closer to the podium over the course of the season too.
Okay, well, that is interesting. So the race is in Levy in this weekend. You know, it's before Ski Sunday. That hasn't started yet. If you're in the UK, as most of our listeners are, we have listeners all over the world, but well, how would people watch those races?
So it is 9 and 12 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday for the first and second runs of the two slaloms. Women on Saturday, men on Sunday. And you can watch it on Eurosport or Discovery Plus, which I believe you need to have a Discovery Plus subscription for, which I would say is absolutely worth it, even if you're only gonna watch the ski racing.
Okay, excellent. Just coming back to Skiing is Believing podcast, and your last episode, I think I mentioned, was an interview with Mark Girardelli. I was lucky enough to interview Permen Zeebruggen a couple of years ago. And when I was around your age, these two and Ingemar Stenmark were the guys who dominated skiing. Girardelli was a bit different because he was a complete all-rounder. Did you enjoy your chat with him?
Honestly, he's an unbelievable guy, really nice, and such a light sense of humour as well. He was talking about inviting Marco Odermatt for a beer and a cigar after the Olympics, talking about the first time he beat Stenmark at 21 in Wengen in the early 80s. So many different bits that you took from it, and I know that me and my granddad both really enjoyed it and would definitely recommend a listen.
Well, I'll be tuning into future episodes. You know, in general, I'm not so interested in ski racing, but I'm interested in specific bits of ski racing. I want to follow how the Brits are doing. I like the narratives, you know, around Hirscher and Brathen, and, you know, so many of the great personalities. I think, you know, we'll obviously be following all of that through the season. I'll be giving updates in the podcast as well. But I am very pleased to announce that the Ski Podcast and the Skiing is Believing podcast are teaming up to form the Ski Podcast Network. And we're going to be working together to help promote each other's podcasts. So it's very early days, but it's very exciting. So watch this space. Well, that is a great, Matt. Thank you very much for that. Let's keep with the racing theme. Regular listeners will know that the Ski Podcast is supporting the next generation of British racers, the Carrick Smith boys. Now, the last time they checked in, we got an insight into their lives, moving from country to country the whole time, training, and in the case of Zach, for rehab after a knee injury. So let's see how they've got on since then.
Hey guys, it's Freddie Carrick-Smith here. I thought I'd give you a quick rundown on what last month looked like for me. I was in France for a little bit, just after being in Sasse. I think I spoke to you guys last time in Sasse. So I was in Sasse for 4 days, which was really good training. And then I rested for like 2 weeks before heading up to Norway, to Oslo, for just 2 days of training on really icy, hard conditions in the indoor dome. And then drove from Norway, Oslo, up to Sweden, where I trained for a little bit, just for a week, which was really solid training, really good, just one lift, super short, so you just could lap around as fast as, well, really fast. So that was really good. And then we drove an hour to Cap Dallas, where we are now, which is amazing training. Definitely coming back here next year. It's my first time actually in Sweden. It's amazing. I've not seen any moose or reindeer yet, but we have seen the Northern Lights, which were incredible. Training super, super good. We're only doing slalom here though, because, well, you can't really do GS. There's three lanes, one World Cup, and then there's one where the race piece is on Saturday and Sunday. Well, we're training for the two races then, and then we got Europa Cups up in Levy after that. Well, that's it for me. I'll speak to you guys next time on the Ski Podcast. I just want to say a huge thank you again to the Ski Podcast. See you next time. Bye.
Hey guys, it's Lukey Carrick-Smith here for another update for the season. We're in the pre-season at the moment. Me and Freddie training in Cap Dallas, which is like the main training area in Sweden. This weekend, we've got the first Fizz races kicking off. We're expecting quite a good level because all the European Cup races are here at the moment. And then heading over to Levy for the Europa Cups. There's World Cups in Levy this weekend, which is exciting. So for the Europa Cups, the snow should be great. I'm really enjoying the training at the moment. We've had so much on snow time. And here in Cap Dallas, you can just lap round because it's just for slalom. Well, there is GS2, but mostly just for slalom. 50-second course, and you just lap round, round after round, and just get in the mileage. Zach is still in Salzburg rehabbing. Hopefully he'll be back in snow in the next couple of weeks. And we'll all fly down to Europe for the beginning of the season. We'll be in Vagrein for most of the year and just go in and out from Vagrein. We're building up to the World Champs and World Junior Champs, and Zach and Freddie have the Youth Olympics coming up in February. Thanks so much. This is just a quick update, and we'll keep you updated throughout the season.
Matt, what would you see as being a good season for the Carrick-Smith boys?
Well, I know that their first races come this weekend in Sweden in some Fizz events, and then they're heading to Levy for their Europa Cup debuts. Who knows? I think they're going to be starting pretty later in the field, because I'm thinking that some of the World Cup guys might well be sticking around to pick up some big points in the Europa Cup the following weekend. As you're saying, they are the future of British ski racing, following on from the legacy that Dave, let's be honest, will have to eventually leave. That these are the next guys to be watching. And I first spoke to Zach shortly after you did, after his Youth Olympic gold medal. Yeah, I think one day, it's a very early call, but one day I think we will be looking at a senior Olympic gold medalist in one of the brothers.
Now, that is a big prediction, one that I like, but that's excellent, Matt. And Nicole, I wonder if I could just turn back to you briefly. You mentioned you're over on the East Coast, and last year we did a feature about Killington. We talked about the incredible atmosphere you get at the slalom race there. I think you told me in the green room that you've been there yourself. Can you back up the sense of excitement you get for that type of race?
It is fantastic. Vermont is a really small state. Population-wise, it's one of the smallest, but the turnout is absolutely electric. And they do a cute thing where they have the local kids in racing programs do a parade at the beginning of it. And the athletes are wonderful about signing helmets and passing along their jerseys. And they really do support the crowd. So it is a two-day event. It is absolutely so much fun. And Killington opens to the public. So you can ski, and I will, and my skis are sharpened and ready to go. And those will probably be my first turns of the season. And we do a little bit of racing on our podcast as well, but we really like to talk to the athletes when we interview them about what did their parents do to help them keep it fun and keep them engaged in the sport, rather than talking about race results. We'll leave that to you, Matt. We were really talking about how did you fall in love with this sport and stick with it? What are the things that your family and your parents did to make sure you didn't burn out? So we do, and we love talking to the moms behind the racers as well, which is a ton of fun.
Well, that will be really interesting. We'll certainly find out about that Killington race from Matt down the track in due course. Right, we're moving towards the close now. I enjoy all feedback about the show. I like to know what you think, especially about our features. So please contact us on social at Ski Podcast or by email, theskipodcast@gmail.com. We've had a few people contact us since the last episode. Sebastian Forsberg, he said, I just wanted to send you some feedback from Sweden. I've listened to all your episodes. I love the show. You have some great conversations and features, especially during the off-season. I loved in episode 221, you spoke about skiing in Sweden. We've got some great resorts here, so there's plenty more to cover. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Sebastian, or Tuck, probably we should say. Billy Mohan said, amazing work, Ian. You've had some epic guests recently. Chris Howie, who I also met at the show, it was really nice to meet listeners face-to-face. He said, I think you do a fabulous job. Your enthusiasm and drive is to be applauded. Thank you very much, Chris. Sarah Lewis sent me an email and she said, can I commend you on the podcast? I've listened to most of the episodes and enjoy the variety of interviews. And I knew who Sarah Lewis was because I happened to listen to Matt's interview with her. She is an ex-racer, a British racer. So you can find out more about Sarah if you want on Matt's podcast. Now, there are now 234 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. I had a look earlier and 181 of those were listened to in the last week. You can do that too. There is so much to listen to in our previous episode. Just go to theskipodcast.com. Search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest to you. In the last week, 58% of our listeners are in the UK, 13% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as India, Fiji, and Ecuador. Now, if you like the podcast, there are three things you can do to help. Follow us. Just look that button when you're listening now and press it. Give us a review or leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Or thirdly, book your ski hire with Intersport Rent using the code SKIPODCAST or take the link in the show notes. Now, you can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at the Ski Podcast. I'd like to thank my guest today. Nicole, thank you very much for joining us from the States.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
No problem. And Matt, thank you very much for joining us and enjoy Levy.
I'm sure I will. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Ian.
And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.